The other day, we got a pitch from the marketing manager at the Chittenden Solid Waste District asking, quote, would you be interested in including a segment about how China's presidential election is impacting recycling in Vermont and what people can do about it? Yes. So joining us now to do that is CSWD General Manager Sarah Reeves. Hi, Sarah.
Hello.
How is China's presidential election affecting recycling in the U.S. broadly?
It's kind of an interesting situation. So China doesn't necessarily have elections like we have elections, but they recently reconfirmed their leader. And their prime minister, their leader, has recommitted the country to being a bit more restrictive on what is coming into the country under the guise of recyclables. All too often over the past 10, 15 or more years of China importing material from the U.S., it hasn't always been the highest quality. There's been a lot of contamination or really trash that's been mixed in with good recyclables. So it has fallen on Chinese plants and factories to sort out the good from the bad. And during this time when China was ramping up their economy, they really needed the raw material. They needed all that feedstock. So they took the good with the bad. But while they were doing that, they were building their own infrastructure and building their plants and teaching their own people how to recycle, all the while biding the time to where they could start to say, you know what, now we are at a place where we think we can start taking good material. So just recently, they have implemented a policy called National Sword. And this is kind of phase two of their environmental policies regarding recycling. The first one was called the Green Fence. And that one ended in 2013. There was a bit of a lull. And now they've pretty much dropped the hammer in the form of a sword. Exactly. On National Sword. And it's much more restrictive.
So the idea is they have enough of this material in China from Chinese consumers that they can have their own sort of start to finish process that goes from product to tossing it in the recycling, through the recycling pipeline and back into new products that then get sold back here in the U.S.?
Well, that's the question.
Yeah.
So that is their goal, their thought process. It remains to be seen whether or not that will actually be the case. So they came out with this directive to the World Trade Organization a few months ago to say, as of a date certain, basically the end of this calendar year, they're going to restrict the import of about 24 different categories of scrap.
Like what? What are we talking about?
So we're talking about everything. Scrap plastic, scrap paper, scrap metal, everything. One of the largest exports in the United States is recycling, is scrap material. So that, of course, sent shockwaves throughout the recycling industry, and people started really scrambling. And that doesn't mean that it wouldn't affect, you know, New England or Vermont because we're on the other side of the world, but actually it does.
Okay, so how is it affecting us specifically in Vermont? I see how it affects the whole U.S. recycling industry since we export a lot of our recycling to China, but specific to Vermont, what might I notice?
You might not notice much on a consumer standpoint immediately. The impacts have yet to roll out. It's going to start affecting the West Coast first. They really have the bulk of the material. They are the direct line to China. In Vermont, we're very fortunate that our markets tend to be more domestic. And when we say domestic, we're including all of North America, so Canada, U.S., and Mexico. However, we do have one of our products, and they are all commodities, so they're all sold on a global marketplace, does get sent to China, and that's our mixed papers. So things like junk mail and envelopes and
newspapers.
That is another part of the industry that has been changing over the past year or so, is changing the different grades of paper and the mixes. Newsprint, as I think we all know, has been declining over the past at least decade or 15 years as newspapers.
You're talking
shrink.
Paper quality, not journalism quality.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely not. The journalism quality needs to continue to be high and I think get even better. So that, no, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the actual paper. And anyone who is, you know, used to be a subscriber and has gone digital, these subscriptions have fallen. The inserts, you know, used to get the Sunday papers nice and thick with all the ads. You don't see that anymore. So just the sheer volume of newspapers as far as their print has declined about 40%. So that has changed the different blends of materials that the material recovery facilities or MRFs are making in different products. But that's our one product that we do routinely send to China, is our mixed paper.
And you say that might be something that, if not on the consumer side, that we notice, but that actually is changing in Vermont. And that's what, the price that these haulers can get for it?
Well, gosh, yeah, the price has taken a tumble, as you can imagine. This really sent shockwaves throughout the world. That is, you know, not solely the United States. This is affecting everyone. We used to be able to sell a certain grade of paper at $70 a ton. That's now down to $8.50 a ton. So, and that was almost literally overnight. Within the space of a few weeks, we saw our prices drop. But again, it's just on that mixed paper grade. So we're fortunate in that, you know, we do see a lot of cardboard in our material carving facility here in Williston. I think a lot of people shop online. So cardboard continues to be strong. What we can see for Vermonters is we want to make sure, because it's a commodity, it will move if the price is right and if the quality is right. And that's really where we have control over our destiny, to put it not too highly, but where we have some control is the quality of the material that we're putting into our blue bins and our blue carts for recycling.
Okay, so to that end, now you're getting at me, what I'm supposed to be doing in my blue bin. So what is it that I can be doing to make sure that my recycling is of the highest quality to then, you know, help down that line?
I'm just going to back up a little bit and say, you know, there's some myths kind of around recycling, right, that everything that's man-made should be recyclable, or if it's plastic, well, it must be recyclable, or, geez, if it's paper of any type, gosh, it must be recyclable, or if there's a chasing arrows or a triangle or a number, not necessarily so. There are some specifications, some specs that we have to follow as a district and as recyclers and as the manager of a material recovery facility, according to what our customers need and our customers at the recycling plants and at the mills, because it really is a manufacturing process. You know, we are part of this manufacturing chain. So if we can't provide our customers, the end user, with the product that they want to create a new product, then that item is not recyclable. So what our customers always want are clean products, clean materials. So that means if it's a plastic container, it's got to be empty and, when at all possible, rinsed. It can only be certain types of containers that we can accept and get onto our customers. When it comes to paper, same thing. It needs to be dry. Moisture content is a very big concern for Chinese importers, and they have rejected whole container loads of material if the material inside the paper is too wet. And their moisture content requirements are very, very low. And you can imagine, you know, here in New England, in Vermont, we get rain, we get snow. So it's important to keep that material dry when at all possible.
Don't take this the wrong way, Sarah, but okay. Why should I care? You know, I drop off at the transfer station, and my recycling is free. Not really, I realize that. But in terms of the additional cost I pay per white bag that I throw away of trash. And the recycling, I can have as much recycling as I want, and I'm not going to get charged extra for that. So it must be hard when there's less of an incentive for consumers to be really careful about what they're recycling, making sure that there are no Tetra Paks from, you know, your orange juice container thrown in there. Or does it really matter if I rinse out that moldy tomato sauce container that I just forgot that I had, and I have a choice between either throwing out the jar or recycling the jar, but it's got a little bit of crud in there? What's the incentive to get consumers to do what you're asking them to do?
That's a great question. And I'm glad you said free, but not really.
Yeah.
Because there's certain materials that at our drop-off centers and other transfer stations that we don't charge for. That does not mean that they are free, right? So there are obviously costs involved with managing all solid waste up and down the chain. But why people should care is, again, the costs follow the material. So, you know, when we're talking about making it easier for us to move the material, that's because we do want to keep those costs low. So if we're having trouble at the material recovery facility from sorting out material, if there's too much stuff in there that shouldn't be in there or it's of bad quality, we're not going to be able to receive the price that we need to get in order to cover our costs. So when we as a district can't cover our costs, then we need to increase what's called tipping fees or disposal fees. fees at these facilities really just to break even. We don't need to make a profit, but we do need to cover our costs. And in order to do that, the more that we can get, the higher the price we can get for those recycling commodities, that means we can either maintain that tipping fee at a low level or we could reduce it. And we have gone up and down in the years to make up for or to cover those losses. And I know some of the recycling facilities throughout New England and even in Vermont are looking at increasing those tipping fees or the disposal fees to cover what they're going to see as that gap or that loss.
As we look to the future, in addition to what it's going to cost to throw away your trash, is the United States working on getting that full circle pipeline so that we're not reliant on China for our recycling and what China will or won't take at any given time?
It's such a great question. And it's something, this has been something that has been building, right, for 20, 30 or more years. Really, once China opened up to the West, it started. And you know, this gets into very high-level federal policies that, you know, you wonder, well, how the heck is that going to affect me? Well, it's going to affect us as far as the consumer prices that we pay for different products coming over from China and Southeast Asia, you know, around the world. And so I think what probably could happen is as these costs go up and as China maybe becomes a little bit less competitive and their pricing starts to go up, that could make goods in the United States more competitive. If that trade imbalance starts to even out, then it's going to make a lot more sense for companies in the U.S. to be looking towards recycled content products as a way to continue to make their product more appealing as far as the price point goes to consumers. That takes a while, you know, so that won't be happening overnight unless the material that the manufacturers, the companies who are making new gadgets and if they can get their feedstock and again, the quantity and the quality that makes sense to compete with raw material, virgin material, they're going to make that choice.
That all seems pretty dependent on consumer products rising in manufacturing price in China. But it sounds like if they can do it all there and they're not reliant on the U.S. market at all, couldn't consumer prices go down in China and that makes it even more difficult in the United States?
They could, but I don't believe that China is there yet with their infrastructure. And that is a critical piece. This is, in some sense, a trial for China to be able to see if they can actually make their growing, burgeoning infrastructure work. Yes, once they get it completely right, you're exactly right. This industry is very cyclical, and this is one of those low points. Again, it will come back up. It'll go back down. We saw a crash in 2008, 2009 that threw the industry into huge turmoil. It rebounded significantly in 11 and 12 and then came back down. It's up and down. Our best bet is to continue to provide our domestic partners, our domestic customers with the highest quality material possible so that, again, part of it, too, is logistics and just the sheer transportation costs that it takes to get materials around the world. And whenever we can send things closer, it's always going to be a better option. It's one of those things where China, too, is going to be testing their own might, I think, in this area. And already they're seeing some Chinese companies move out of China and into Southeast Asia. So we've long been looking towards Southeast Asia for an additional outlet. You know, we learned long ago that you don't want to put all of your eggs into one basket, and this is reason why. So we've been looking towards India, Thailand, Vietnam, Laos, the Koreas, Philippines, and those are growing markets. They're not quite at the sophistication level of China, but they're up and coming. So it is stretching it out a little bit more, and we'll be wanting to take advantage of that when we can, but we won't be able to unless we can assure them as a country or as a region that we can provide high quality material.
Sarah Reeves is the general manager of the Chittenden Solid Waste District. Thank you very much for connecting us to the rest of the world today.
I appreciate it. Thank you.